Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it, and right now they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Well, it's my show and it's my party and I can cry if I want to, as the song goes. This is Jerry Pives and you've just been listening to What a Wonderful World by the great and wonderful Sashmo Louis Armstrong, my favourite piece of music in the whole world. So I thought I'd start the show with the same piece of music every time. So you're here, real people in the psychotherapist chair, and I want to say a big welcome to Renita Kertesz. Renita, welcome to the psychotherapist chair.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
You must already be certifiable for anyone who sits in the psychotherapist chair. So that already suggests that you're completely bonkers anyway, which is a necessary requirement, I think, in these days. I think sanity is a vastly overrated commodity. So you're already bonkers. But why are you doing this? Just tell me what drew you to coming in here and talking about yourself so that our listeners can hear about you and your life. What drove you to put yourself in the hot seat, as it were?
Yeah, well, my lovely mother-in-law actually volunteered me to have this conversation. She put my name forward. She talked about you interviewing a surfer and looking for more surfers. And so she felt inspired that I am living a life of bonkers. and surfing has shaped and changed my life. And, you know, that's an aspect of my life that I could share about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it absolutely came as a response to a request that I put out on one show. And someone said, look, surfing's really important for helping us. And they said a few things that helped. I can't even remember what they were, but I think it was kind of mind, body, spirit, kind of sanity, I don't know what. But I know, Renita, that I put out the call and your wonderful mother-in-law wrote this. I'm going to read out her email for everyone. She says, "Hello, Jerry. First, I do love your program. Thank you, Gillian. And the gentle way in which you bring so many life truths out from your interviews." Yeah, thank you, Gillian. "For a while, I have thought of recommending Renita, my daughter in love, brackets. She says there's no law about it, close brackets. After your program the other week, you mentioned about having someone on who was a surfer. What drives them into the water for hours? Exclamation mark. She was not a surfer until my son, a surfer, brought Renita surfing lessons for a gift. She had many fears to overcome, and then she trained as a teacher, and then she trained as a naturopath. She's an inspiring and encouraging Facebook writer, plus in the process of writing a book." Wonderful. "She is someone I treasure in my life, mother to my grandchildren. I did mention to her yesterday it was okay to contact you." Well, there you go. That's quite a recommendation, isn't it, Renita?
Beautiful, so beautiful in itself, yeah.
I can relate to your mother-in-law's sentiments. Daily I feel so much gratitude for the partner of my own son, who's the mother of my only grandson. And most days I wake up and I just feel so grateful for the gift of not only him, but also what she does for my son and what she does for my grandson. It's just like, yeah, anyone who thinks a woman bringing up children is in some way a slave, they just need to put a vacuum cleaner inside their ear and scrape out their brains, because they haven't got a clue of what really matters in this world. So, yeah, everything, the children matter so much. So, Renita, I know nothing about you, and I really want to hear about your surfing. I also want to hear about your book. As a fellow author, I'm always interested in supporting and encouraging other people to write books. But let's start at the beginning. Tell me a little bit about how come you're in New Zealand. Tell me a little bit about your background, your family history. How did you end up in New Zealand?
Yeah, fair call. I have always been in New Zealand, so I'm born and raised in New Zealand. But I am... my dad is a Kiwi European and my mum is Fijian Indian. So My dad was on a mission trip back in the day, and he met my mum, and he really fancied her, and they started writing letters, and he actually proposed to her by letter, and they got married in Fiji and moved to New Zealand, where they had four children. I'm number three in the mix. And so I grew up in Ruakaka, Northland. That's where I was born and raised and went to school. And in fact, I only just moved out of Ruakaka 10 months ago. Now I am in Tairua in the Coromandel. Yeah.
Cool. So, yes, I mean, the listeners can't see you, but I just want to say you're a stunningly beautiful young woman. And, you know, I can see that you have, you know, the Pacifica or the Fijian roots, and I can see the Indian roots in your in how you look, and of course the European as well. So three deeply beautiful and amazing cultures: European, which of course is a multiplicity of cultures in itself, and Fijian and Indian. So, and your dad was on a mission to Fiji, was it? Was that where he was?
Yes.
So tell me, what mission was he on?
It was part of a church mission. So they go and they were sharing Christianity with the with the people in Fiji. I'm not sure if they were. It's interesting because the Fijian Indian for me is actually not Fijian, but Indians who have lived in Fiji. So they didn't really mix. Yeah. So when I go to Fiji to visit family, it's all Indians who live in Fiji.
So we're down to two cultures primarily then. We're down to your roots are very much in the Indian tradition of your mother and the European tradition of your father. And it sounds like he was a passionate Christian by the sound of it.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. So that's been a huge part of my upbringing in Christianity and a huge part of my journey and what I share about. Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating. I'm so interested in people's spiritual journey. In fact, unlike many psychotherapists, one of my first questions to all my clients is, so how do we speak in terms of spiritual language? What language do you use? You know, I don't want to impose my particular brand of anything on anyone in my psychotherapy sessions. They come not for spiritual counseling. They come for all sorts of issues. But I want to be able to talk of the spiritual with them. Let's dive in right there. There we go. Let's just go with this. In terms of spiritual language, how do you talk about the spiritual part of life? I'd love to know what language works for you.
Yeah, well, I love what you just said, because that's me as well. Like, as a naturopath, like, I've learned that, you know, I'm not here to convince anyone of one way or one thing. I just want to facilitate them having their own connection with God or the universe or source. Like, I've come to a place where I'm okay with any language. My summary is, God is love. And if you can feel and hear love, then keep leaning forward into that voice, into that presence, because that's who I believe God is. Yeah, I think that's the universal language of God.
I'm just sitting here and I'm wallowing in the beautiful kind of heart energy that you just talked of, where you spoke of leaning into what is love.
Yeah.
I love that expression. I suspect that might be a surfing expression. What do you think?
I was just thinking of surfing too, because my journey with like cracking more open with spiritual language and like a more diverse spiritual path kind of really coincided with the surfing as well. Yeah, there's just a lot of flow in surfing, and there's a lot of, you know, the wateriness of it and the movement and the being in your body. And being in my body has been an aspect that I didn't grow up with in Christianity. Christianity was a lot about doing external things, but the great thing was that, you know, my parents raised me to hear the voice of God, to spend time with God for myself. And that is the strength of my life, because I'm devoted to God and spending time with God and hearing God within me and the voice of wisdom. It guided me to surfing. It guided me to be more open with my language. And so that's where the bridge happened, that I started to listen to what God was speaking to me through my body as well. And surfing got me in the water, out of my head, out of like reading 1,000 books on the prophetic and Christianity and like trying to be the best Christian I could ever be, to actually realizing God wants me to enjoy my life. And surfing is a part of like, I can be with God in the water, on the water, moving like in my body, like squealing with delight. That's what surfing gifted me, because I was trying so hard to be a devoted Christian, but I needed to let go and have fun and realize God loves that too.
Beautiful. I just am so excited by this conversation. I'm likely to forget some of the really basics. So let me ask a few basics and we'll come back to this. I'm going to flag that. But I want to come back to that conversation because that is such an exciting conversation. And I think many, many listeners are going to be fascinated, both Christian listeners and non-Christian listeners. I think people are going to be very interested. I certainly am. But let's go back to some sort of down-to-earth basics. So your parents came to New Zealand.
Well, my dad was here already, but yeah.
So your dad was on mission from a New Zealand church, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Do you know what church he was part of?
Christian Renewal Fellowship at the time, I think.
Okay. Yeah. What sort of church was that? I mean, I'm not familiar with many of the New Zealand churches.
Pentecostal, probably. Charismatic.
Pentecostal and charismatic. So for any listeners who don't know what that is, it means we dance around a lot and we praise the Lord with our hands up in the air and we sing lots of worship and generally muck around looking like idiots, except I think to be an idiot for God is wonderful. And the charismatic means that it's often rooted in the first century apostolic principles of speaking with tongues and healing and declaring prophecy upon each other. So that's the roots of your father's spirituality. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, you can tell that I'm not just a psychotherapist. I love your body connection because I started life as a body worker and I still do body work. In fact, I'm currently revolutionizing and putting a block of dynamite up the anal sphincters of psychotherapy profession by suggesting that they should all be touching and that it's actually unethical not to touch your clients. So I'm causing a shitstorm in the psychotherapy world, but that's my nature and that's my purpose in life, is to generally disrupt the balance of things and see what comes out of the new settling. If you disrupt everything and something new emerges, I'm sure you can appreciate that in your own physical naturopathic kind of journey. Is that right? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh my gosh, we're in good company. Disrupt the status quo, shake up those foundations. Every system that doesn't serve people needs to crumble.
Nice. Yeah. I love it. Beautiful. Every system that doesn't serve needs to crumble. And on your, I still haven't got to the basic questions. I've had too much coffee this morning already. I can tell I'm climbing the walls with excitement. So we're just talking about the breakdown of systems and destruction and chaos and breaking down is, I think, very much the male gift to humanity, that we're very good at breaking things down. Blokes love smashing a wall down, you know. We know you've got to, no, we can't fix that. We need to just start at the bottom, knock down the wall, build new foundations. Let's get something new built. Blokes understand destruction. And I think in the same way that women understand creation in a way that no man can fully understand, the idea that you can grow a life inside your own body is just a mystery to me. It's just the most incredible miracle to be a person who is a female who can grow a baby inside her. Wow. Wow. Talk about power. I mean, the most
powerful.
I can hardly make anything. I can barely change a plug, actually. So it was like, so I know in your website, you write about the male energy as providing the boundaries of the riverbank and the female energy as being the flowing water down. I love that image on your website.
Yeah, that was a while ago I wrote that. Yeah, that's been another massive part of my journey. And we're diving right in there with Christianity, like just knowing, you know, God is my father and it's so much about God and he and that. And then I came to, and I've just been writing about this in this book that I've been collaborating as writing a chapter in a book. And I'm sharing about how, you know, going into surfing and being in the water, the wisdom of the water really introduced me to God as my mother too, and God as the feminine. And it's been transformative to my journey to know God as both mother and father. And everything's just like, it just makes sense. How can you just have only a father and Jesus the son and there's no mother in the picture, you know? And so that's been so beautiful for me to, yeah, to experience that and to let that aspect of God's love and nature into my life and into my parenting, into my faith.
Wow, I think so many listeners are going to be jumping up and down with excitement at what you're saying, because, you know, the language of spirituality historically has been spoken through mostly, not all, but very patriarchal societies and cultures and languages. But the idea that God is just male is kind of so ridiculous, because if God created everything, God created men and women, which means that nobody knows more about being a woman than God, right?
Yes, exactly. Made in their image, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not just a spare rib then, right?
Yeah, let's just laugh at that.
Actually, it's a joke, because the Bible doesn't mention spare rib. It says from his body. So it's like we're a part of each other, men and women. You know, we come from the same stuff. And in fact, I think if you actually, you know, and I'm sure you have, when you look at the Bible, it actually says we complete each other. We fulfill each other, that we are not complete on our own. You know, otherwise people would have grown up with all we'd see is a world full of little caves and little individual humans sitting in caves, you know, but we're made to fulfill each other. And I'm not dictating that, you know, how that should be. I'm just saying that actually the Bible says we're incomplete.
And there's a surfing analogy that really helps me with the masculine and the feminine and that structure and the flow. Like, you see it as a surfer because obviously you have waves and tides and the curve of the wave, all very feminine aspects. But then to have a great wave, you need the structure. You need a good bank, a good sandbank or a coral reef or rocks. That's firm. That's like, you know, what you need the wave to hit. And then you need the right wind direction. Like, there's all these things, these factors that are a bit more fixed that need to come into place for the wave to actually be a wave. So it's structure and flow. Like, you know, there's a huge feminine rising movement that swings too far, where, you know, we're putting men down and we're just blaming the patriarchy for everything. And, you know, I'm not down with that. I'm like you, we need each other. We need good structure. I need good banks to surf, you know, and then I need to be able to let that wave flow over the bank and jack up and create an epic wave to have a great ride. We need each other.
Beautiful, beautiful. What a powerful image of the harmony between that kind of beautifully almost moon-based flow and ebb of tide and that kind of immensely feminine, and then this structural sandbank. Do you know, that's making me think about some, I am no surfer. I can't even stand on a board, you know, without for more than a millisecond. I never persisted with it, but I'm in awe of surfers actually, because I think it's so beautiful. And I love going down to St. Clair in Dunedin, at St. Clair's Beach, because the tide comes right up against the promenade and all the surfers are literally surfing almost straight onto the promenade. Have you ever been down there?
No, I haven't.
But it means I can sit sipping my latte out in the sun, and I can watch all these amazing athletes do their balancing and their beautiful. I can watch surfers for days. I just find it mesmerizing. And it's probably because it is this beautiful balance of masculine and feminine. And there's a totality. I've seen YouTube clips of an amazing place in Portugal. It begins with an N. What's you'll know it? Where there's some, what do you call it? Nazaré. That's it. And you literally see what you've described. You literally see a flat sea coming in, and then suddenly this monster wave emerges for a very short period of time and very close to land. And you see these, sometimes they're like 100-foot high. They're incredible. And you see these, you see the lunatic element of surfing, you know, the sort of I want to kill myself element, the people that need to see a psychotherapist and make decisions to keep themselves safe and their families safe. But that's just an old fuddy-duddy talking.
Yeah, they're pretty inspiring, those big wave surfers. Definitely not for me.
No, I think I don't think many of those surfers would ever walk into my treatment room, because they'd walk out in disgust. As I said, now, what are you going to do to keep yourself safe and alive? And they go, what?
Oh, they'll tell you. They wear all the safety gear and they have the, you know, it's a big business of keeping them alive. But they do inspire me.
If there are any extreme surfers out there who want to come and see me for therapy, have a go. You know, we'll have a good old mudslinging competition as to what's safe and what isn't. But yeah, they wear body armor, don't they? I mean, it's a completely different sport, right?
Yeah, and they're like fitted with little CO2 gas things to inflate life jackets, like multiple levels of inflation, so they can get to the surface to breathe, because the wave will push them down. And without that gear, they wouldn't be riding those waves. They do now. But the gear saves their lives. Yeah.
And not to mention that, but the death-defying, what's it called? The things that pull them out. The
Yeah, jet skis.
Yeah, that's it. the death-defying skill of the jet ski drivers. Do you call them drivers, captains, navigators? I don't know. What do you call a jet ski driver?
The drivers, yeah.
They are pushing it right to the limit, aren't they? I mean, they're literally sitting in the face of these kind of avalanche-looking waves, and they're just somehow surviving. I mean, it's breathtaking stuff. And it's an inspiration, isn't it?
Yeah. And I love to watch surfing, and, you know, a bit more of the basics is I watched my husband surf for 15 years before I got that lesson. And I loved watching. When we were just first going out, you know, I borrowed his sister's wetsuit. We went out at Taupo Bay and we went out the back, and he tried to teach me to surf, and I was cold and the waves terrified me, and I didn't manage. And then, you know, we had three children, and then amongst that, I had no space or desire or spark to learn to surf. And it's a funny place where I got the guidance to surf, but I was on the top of Cadrona ski field and I was having a ski lesson. And so I'd done my lesson and then we'd gone up the chairlift and I was so terrified. I was going to go like on the mountain doing my skiing. And I just was straining, holding on. Like, I don't know if you ski. Have you skied before? No,
but I'll tell you something. My house garden looks out over the Cadrona Valley. I'm in Wanaka. I literally look down the Cadrona Valley. So that's so funny that you're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. It's so stunning up there. I felt like I was on top of the world. But I was terrified because I just couldn't use the brakes good enough. And my muscles were burning and I was clenching because it was just so fast. And that's when the Spirit of Wisdom, Holy Spirit, whoever you want to call the boys, just said, you need to learn something that helps you let go and have fun.
Wow. So you decided to do surfing.
Well, Northland skiing, I was going to have a very expensive hobby and I wasn't going to get much practice. And I'd been watching surfing. My husband surfed for 15 years and we live by the beach. So you know what? It took me a year and a half after that guidance to actually still learn to surf. And something that might relate to many listeners is that I was a mummy martyr. I was in the midst of being a mum and I just took the back seat. I didn't swim in summertime because, you know, to get three kids dry and fed and, like, you know, not screaming after a beach trip, you know, it was too hard for me to get wet too. And, like, I put all my needs to the back. They took the back seat and I gave everything, put the kids first. And I wasn't doing something that would nourish myself, nourish like my need to play and have fun. And so God bless my husband. He gave me that push I needed. A year and a half later, he just bought me a soft top surfboard, best thing to learn on. He bought me the surf lesson with the Waipu Surf School. And that was for Christmas. So a few days later, I went and had my first lesson.
And what was different about that? You said your first experience of surfing was not good. So what was different for you about that?
Yeah. Well, my husband was just a great surfer, so he didn't know the basics because he couldn't remember them. And I was trying to ride a regular board. The cold is a big deal for me, so having a wetsuit that didn't fit me didn't also work. So, so the big difference was having the right gear. Like a soft top surfboard is essential for learning because you need good success. And having someone, just a surf lesson is, you know, a few hundred dollars to get yourself started. And then you're getting the right kind of basics from the beginning. And then you get success. So I got up on my first surf lesson a bunch of times. And I will give credit for my, like, doing press ups. I have a very strange habit of doing press ups since I was a teenager, or doing burpees. So if you've got that pop up already, like for those out there who are wanting to learn to surf this summer, start doing press ups, start doing burpees. If you have a bit of balance, you're going to have, like, you're going to succeed a lot quicker and then it's going to be fun.
Well, I think I might even give it a try. You know, you're inspiring me. So just in case you're wondering what on earth you've just tuned into, you are listening to Reality Check Radio. And my name is Jerry Pives, and this is Real People in the Psychotherapist Chair. And we have the naturopath and surfer and mum, Renita Curtis, to explore so many interesting subjects. And we're talking about, what are we talking about, Renita?
We're really talking about, like, letting go. My call as a mother to let go. You know, I was a school teacher and I was good at controlling the classroom. And then I became a mother and I had a baby that wouldn't sleep when I wanted her to, and a toddler that wouldn't eat what I wanted to do. And I was very frustrated, you know. And so when I was on Cadrona Mountain learning to ski and terrified, I got that call that I needed to learn to let go and to play.
Wow. Wow. And you used the expression, you were a martyr mother. Do you want to explain that?
Yeah. And this is how I often attract clients who are similar. I call it the mummy martyr. So the mummy martyr, she puts her children's needs before her own. She puts on all their masks while she's not getting any air herself and wondering why parenting is so hard. And mummy martyr doesn't do anything for herself that's fun. She puts her family first. And there's a beauty to that and there's a sacrifice to that, but it's not sustainable. And the nervous system just can't live, like, in that state of fight or flight. And once I started learning and picking up what my body was telling me, I realized I was not breathing. I'm trying to get the kids ready for school and my breathing was just shallow. It was just, so when I got this wisdom about playing, letting go, like not putting everyone's needs before mine, I started getting these beautiful taps on the shoulder from spirit, from the divine. Put your shoulders back. Take a deep breath. let go. You can't control everything. Okay. And then when I had some space and time, I used to like read spiritual books or try and be a good Christian, you know, to tick off some things that I thought I had to do. And then once I got this wisdom, I would go out to surf if there was surf, or I would listen to my body. What does my body need? How do I need to move or be in nature? Or I started nourishing myself and I stopped being a mummy martyr. Oh, it still creeps back in, though, definitely from time to time.
Yeah, it still creeps back in. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
And habits like that often come down through generations, don't they? So yeah. I'm just wondering can you track that back in your family? Can you see that pattern of mothering going back in your family?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody can relate to seeing their mum, or even just the social conditioning of the kind of mum you need to be, and, you know, to tick all these boxes and meet all these needs and make sure your children are, that's more probably what I'd reflect on, because, yeah, it is fascinating throughout all lineages how the expectations on mothers and what's required of them. Yeah. I mean, my mum, obviously, she moved from Fiji and she had to make a whole set of new friends. And, you know, she started popping out babies. There was four of us under 5 years old. So she was probably subconsciously just keeping her head above the water just to keep us fed and clothed. And, you know, she did an amazing job. We're all beautiful humans now. But yeah, she probably was just giving and giving and giving, and we subconsciously pick that up as children, don't we? And we see that, and so that's why it's a big deal for me to step back so my own children see, oh, mum's doing something for her. You know, we're not the center of the universe. She loves us, but she knows how to love herself.
Beautiful. I bet there are so many mums and women listening to this, and fellas too. You know, we all had mothers, you know, and so many of us, well, I hope we all had mothers, and some may have had that disrupted tragically. But I am thinking about the weight of culture, the weight of generations that sits upon our shoulders, everyone. And your mother coming from an Indian cultural tradition. I mean, one of the things I know a little bit about that culture, but I'm no expert. But the woman in the family, I think, is meant to be very much under the authority of the male, of the husband. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yeah, I think so. Very subservient.
Very traditional roles. Yeah. And so for you to step out and say, maybe Renita matters in this family equation, maybe your survival is relevant to everyone else's survival. That's a big step, right? That's a big step.
And I want to highlight like the beauty of like my husband's heart, who he was the one who gave me that push. It's amazing. And that's what is so beautiful to see when the masculine and the feminine are working together and loving and supporting one another. Like, he saw my need for fun. He probably wanted me to help to understand what it's like to be a surfer too, because, you know, when I'm looking after little kids, he's gone for like 4 hours and I'm like, how was your surf? And he's like, it was okay. And I'm like, you've been gone for 4 hours. It should have been fun, right? You better be having fun if I'm looking after the kids on my own for 4 hours. And now that I'm a surfer, I get it, you know? I get how 4 hours can be eaten up and the surf session may be average even though you had 4 hours.
How wonderful. And I think you're talking also, I mean, I'm still trying to find out the basics. I haven't got through in this conversation. I haven't got through the first 2 minutes. You know, like, I generally require myself to know how old is the person I'm working with and how many children does she have? And I haven't even got round to it. I've been so excited by this conversation.
Yeah, okay. So I am 38, almost 39. And I have three almost teenage children now. So here's a really good summary. When I was 18, this is the question about like adulting and stuff. When I was 18, we bought our first house, my husband and I. We were not quite married, but we were engaged. So 18. And then 19, I was 19 when we got married. And then I graduated as a school teacher, primary school teacher at, was it 20? Yeah, 20. Did a couple of years and then got my registration. And then that was me, very organized, planned. I planned it so I'd have our first child when I was registered as a teacher. So that was 23. We had our first girl, Chantel. And yeah, then again, the planner, every 2 years after that, we had another one. We planned our baby. So I jumped head in. I was keen to be an adult, have a whole lot of responsibility, and, you know, really was passionate about having a family. I was excited about that. And yeah, when our first child was just 6 weeks old, then we got the invitation to pastor a church as well. So that was when I was 23 and my husband would have been 27, 28. We did that for 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What church were you part of?
So that was the same church my dad had been part of, Christian Renewal Fellowship. They had a daughter church in Ruakaka. So yeah, we did that, pastoring, you know, my husband, obviously the pastor, and then I did a lot of the worship leading, love to sing, you know, that's your topic, you love music, I love to sing. Yeah, and we had our babies through that season of our life. We were raising babies, and as you can imagine, my nervous system, I just pushed myself, you know, I was a mommy martyr and also giving to what I thought was, like I said, being a good Christian is serving others. But I'd say today, being a good Christian is what Jesus said is love others as you love yourself.
Yeah. And I think, there have been so many perversions of Christ's beautiful message.
Yeah.
By humans doing what humans do, which is to complicate, to dump our own stuff on everything mm-hmm. we do because we're not mm-hmm. doing enough work on ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, just last night I had a psychotherapy group I've been training in the UK on Zoom recently, and we were literally talking about how do you operate, not just in, I mean, to be a good therapist, I think, means to be a good human being. That's how I see it. So yeah. I feel like learning to be a therapist is about learning to be a better me. And mm-hmm. I was saying to the students how, you know, we have all these conversations about transference and counter-transference. It's just, how do you break out of all of that? Well, they were asking me how you break out of it. And I said, it's really simple. You know, you ask yourself, who is this person to me? From my history, from my family, from my early life, who might this person represent? And then you write down all the things that are different about them and that person. So you know mm-hmm. the difference. And that means you don't dump your stuff from mm-hmm. your path onto the people you're with. In fact, I might do a little talk about that in my reflections. I might talk about how we break away from dumping on others, dumping on yeah. you know, and churches are renowned for this, you know, church mm-hmm. communities are renowned for not paying enough attention, I think, and all communities, all groups yeah. of humans, they mm-hmm. screw up every, it makes me angry. I'm just going to get my soapbox out here and I'm going to rant for a little bit, even though it's your interview, but I'm going to mm-hmm. say almost every group of human beings that comes together, if they don't work on themselves, they mm-hmm. destroy whatever it is they've tried to create. It's so bad. Mm-hmm. It's so naughty. I think I shall have to go around New Zealand giving a tour of workshops, calling it how to communicate with your group, with your community, with your whanau. Yeah. You know, how do you do this? Because it's so important.
Yeah, so important.
My rant is over now. We can return to the... I'll probably just cut that out.
No, it's great. Great. I'm with you. We need to empower one another to be who we're meant to be, right? Yeah.
So I want to come back to that flag that I planted earlier on in our conversation around, if you like, the relationship between the inner spiritual, almost the, is it the Psalms that talk about the still quiet voice or the quiet still voice? That we have to listen to the quiet still voice. And when we read about the life of Jesus, we hear that he was forever taking himself off, you know, that he would just tell the disciples to sort of stay over there and he would just wander off to a rock or somewhere and he would just sit. And I often wonder whether if one of the disciples had crept up on him secretly, assuming that he wouldn't know, which of course he would, but if they creep up on him, would they have heard a load of jabbering words coming out of Jesus's mouth as he talked to God? Or would he have just been sitting there in the deepest, stillest, felt silence? I think I go for the latter. What do you go for, Renita?
So beautiful that you ask, because really, I was having a beautiful prayer time with God, walking on the beach. This must have been 15 years ago. And Jesus said, would you be quiet? And I was like, okay. And I stilled myself. I was walking. And then the downloads, the voice, it just flowed. And I could hear God. And it was a real turning point in my faith. Because I was a good prayer, you know, like I prayed like the church taught me to pray. And most of my prayer is silent now. It's very visual too. I have very prophetic giftings kind of turned on early in my life. And the vision realm is very real. And I often just pray for people by imagining them and, you know, painting them in hearts and seeing a bubble growing around them and they're just filled with God's love. Like, that's how my prayer is now. It's silent.
That is so beautiful, Renita. That is so beautiful. Sometimes, you know, I was brought up by an atheist mother and a very absent father. So cough's always coming at moments like that.
You've got to get off your chest.
Look, I'm supposed to be analysing you, not you analysing me.
Yes, sir.
I was brought up by an atheist mother and spent probably from the age of 7 till the age of 13 in church and cathedral choirs. So the only real praying lessons, because she never sent me off to Sunday schools. No one ever talked to me. I would just turned up at church and I sang. So they all assumed I knew what a Christian was. I hadn't a clue. and I just happened to be around, you know, the readings and the prayers. They always felt so horrible to me because everyone constantly talked about people's suffering. Even at a young age, I felt really uncomfortable with that. And I thought, oh no, it's prayer time. When's the next song? You know, when do we sing the Magnificat or the Nunc Dimittis or the Anthem or the Psalms? And it was like, I couldn't wait to stand up and almost shake off the prayers that were so depressing of people dying and people suffering. And it was like, wow. And I had an instinct that there was something odd about this. And it was only many, many years later that I suddenly said, I want to hold people in God's love. I want to hold them in the best possible space. I want my energy to unite with God's energy and to say, hey, God, send them some good shit, you know, send them some good stuff, you know.
Come on. Yes, love it. I feel that. You sent some to me right now. It's powerful. Swinging that sword.
Yeah. Yes, and I'm sure many listeners are sending you a big bunch of hearts sending your way because of all that you're sharing, Renita. And it's so real what you're talking about. You're talking about you know, being a mummy martyr and having to take care of yourself. We're talking about the weight, the burden of generations of being considered to be unimportant, maybe, or putting yourself last. It's very funny though, because in my therapy work, I often find I'm working with women to sort of take more care of themselves and stand up for themselves and acknowledge, you know, what they need. And we blokes, I'm often asking them, and so the women are often being, I'm supporting them, and they naturally sort of strengthen up, you know, they tone up. And with many of the blokes, very often I'm trying to soften them down. Trying to help them to say, do you know, you're not the only person in the universe. There are these things called partners and children and families and communities. And like, maybe it would be good to stop for a moment and just consider how you can help them achieve their needs. So it's almost like the exact, you know, women need to become, a lot of women need to become more selfish, self-orientated. And a lot of men are amazed at the joy they get from enabling children, partners. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. I'm so with you on that. Really am. Yeah, and it does really feel selfish at first, and it's why it probably took me so long, and it's why I'm a huge advocate for women getting into surfing. If it's on your heart or whatever the sport or the thing is, I'm saying make steps to do this, because it feels selfish at first because we're so used to putting others' needs above our own. But everyone wins when the mum's winning. Everyone, the whole family, the whole atmosphere of the family is more playful and relaxed because mum is more playful and relaxed. And we all know the mum just carries such a powerful, you know, atmosphere in the home. That's what I love to help women with, you know, nourish yourself and you will so seamlessly nourish your family from the overflow.
Beautiful. I think that's a one of those fridge messages, isn't it, that you stick on the fridge at home. Everyone wins when mum wins.
Yeah.
What a great magnet message that should be on every fridge of every family. Everyone wins when mum wins. I love that. I love that. So now, Renita, what are you up to? What are you up to in your life? You talk about being a very, well, you actually describe yourself as a total control freak. Let's be honest about it.
I was before I was surfing. I've let go a lot.
And in many ways, that controlling has a sort of almost a masculine feel about it. And the water got you in touch with your feminine. So tell the listeners why we should all take up surfing today, not tomorrow, but today.
Yeah, today is a good day. There's a little bit of swell out there. We had some good waves on the weekend, and I feel so blessed that I got to surf with my family twice on the weekend. So fun, so much bonding. And yeah, the surf puts you in your place. So it's so hilarious. If you are in a bad bunk and you're surfing, guess what? You're going to get tumbled and beat down and the waves aren't going to go your way. And, you know, nothing's going to change until you change your energy. You get direct real-time feedback of what your life is like. And so I have some beautiful sacred geometry on my board to remind me to be in my heart center when I'm on my board. So I paddle out. Sometimes I forget, but then I like look down, just get in my heart center and start giving thanks. I'm like, thank you. It's sunny today. Thank you. There's waves, whatever it is. Thank you. Sometimes it's not sunny and it's freezing and I have to dig deeper to find something I'm grateful for out in the surf. Because, you know, how many Indian surfers do you know, Jerry? We don't like the cold, but New Zealand, the water gets very cold. So I get in my heart space. And I make sure I'm in gratitude and, you know, just feeling in harmony with God, with creation, with the water. And then I have fun and play and I get feedback. You know, it doesn't mean when you're in good vibes that everything goes your way, because I'm there to learn. I'm there to grow. I'm the water is my teacher, the ocean, you know, she's my mentor and she teaches me. And I, like I talked about before, I have to be in my body because I can't be somewhere else in my head thinking what this person thinks about me, thinking, you know, what did the kids get enough school lunches, this, that, all the mummy martyr things. I have to be there in my body, in the present moment, you know, feeling each angle, each tilt, each, has the wave gripped my board yet to catch me on the wave? Like, is it steepening up? Is it like, I have to be in my body to be perceiving all these things, to ride that wave. So that's what's gifted me.
And it's a beautiful metaphor, isn't it? Because we're not meant to make the wave. We're not meant to force the wave. We can't control the wave. We have to ride it. And what a metaphor for life that is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you get so many metaphors for life when you surf. That's why you need to start today. Because the other thing is, I'm not going to paddle for a wave that's not there as well. And so many people just think they have to be busy doing. And in life, people are paddling for waves that aren't on the horizon. And this trust and flow and surrender to the divine, you know, it means that we wait until we see a wave on the horizon. Then we position ourselves, not frantically paddling around, just trying to make, like you said, we can't make the wave. We have to wait for the one and then align ourselves with, you know, the wave that's coming.
We keep coming back, don't we, to this sense of receiving rather than forcing.
Yeah. Yep. Trust, surrender. Mm-hmm. That's the feminine.
I've been so blessed in my life with so many beautiful opportunities to do what I love, and I love what I do. And I know that's a real gift, a real blessing. And I think the key to that is I've never planned my life in any way whatsoever.
Wow.
I've just felt like, okay, what's next? And I've gone inside and listened for that voice. Sometimes it's hard, isn't it? I actually think everyone has God inside them. I think everyone has the capacity to tune in, to open their heart. And I think the heart is central. It's not about yabbering away and telling God what you want from him or her. It's about hearing the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that truth is not comfortable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the truth, and I think it's in the body, sometimes the truth is, I'm really uncomfortable. I must go and make peace with this person.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm sure I hear God say, you know, stop navel gazing and putting yourself into some pretend peacefulness. Go and make it up with your wife. Mm-hmm. You behaved very badly and you need to say sorry.
Yeah, when you're in touch with your heart center, you feel those fractures, right? You feel that separation. And when you are listening to your heart, you're so much more inspired to respond rather than somebody telling you this is what you have to do. When you feel that separation, when you commune with God, with love, you're like, ooh, there's something out of alignment that I want to make peace with. And it's, you know, and, you know, when you go to your wife or when I go to my husband, when we've had that fracture, it's like, it's so authentic and it flows because your heart is for reconciliation and peace. And it's the same with our children, you know. As a mom, we say things we don't want to say because they fucking annoy us sometimes, you know, and things come out of our mouth that we don't want to say. And instead of beating ourselves up, feel it, you know, feel that separation, like that sucks. That's not my higher self, but, you know, it happened. And we can go and reconcile with our children and apologize because we let love from the divine flow and heal our heart. It's easier to forgive others because we're forgiving ourselves, right?
I'm just wondering where the listeners can find you, Renita, because I'm sure quite a few of them might be going, oh, I want to see this naturopath. She sounds just awesome. You do to me anyway. And I love how you talk of everything and I love your philosophy. How do people find you if they're listening and they want to find out more about you?
Yeah, well, I am on both Facebook and Instagram, just from my name, Renita Curtis, and my website is harmonichealth.nz.
Harmonichealth.nz, and all those newfangled things called Facebook and Instagram and stuff I don't really understand. Yeah, and I guess we've been talking an awful lot about control and letting go. And we've been framing that in terms of masculine and feminine balance. And of course, Jung was, I think, probably the first psychotherapist to really talk about, you know, the inner us all needing both the structure of the masculine side and the flow of the female side. He called them archetypes, didn't he? And he was the breakthrough psychologically. I might talk about him in my reflections. I always like talking about Jung.
Sounds good. Yeah.
Well, Renita, we've run out of time. I barely feel like we've sat down, and this has been so exciting. I feel like I've jumped on your surfboard and you've taken me down a wonderful ride, and I've just been sitting at the back and going, wow, this is great.
That's how it feels. It really feels good.
I want to say a big thank you for coming on and sharing your life and your journey with all its richness and with all the deep thought that you've brought and self-questioning. It's been really wonderful. I am certain that you must be a great naturopath. You must really, and you're going to be running some workshops. You're setting up some workshops, I think, if I read your website right. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, because I've moved to the Coromandel. It's my desire to start, doing some more local collaborations. I'd love to be able to teach and share, you know, from the wealth of wisdom that I've learned and the tools that I've gained along the way. So, yeah, good reminder. I need to keep creating that workshop.
Well, I bet there's loads of listeners that would be excited by that. So, you know, if you're listening and you go to her website, just send her a message and tell her to get a move on.
Love it. I okay. See the wave. I'll start paddling.
That's it. Let's make it. We're not going to make a wave. Let us become part of a wave that is on the horizon. And Renita is just sitting there astride her surfboard and she looks out to the horizon. She sees this rising wave. So she very calmly and gently, without rush, is gently positioning herself in exactly the right place to catch that wave of real beauty.
Yes, come on. I see it.
Renita Curtis, thank you so much for sharing your life and your thoughts and your passions, particularly your surfing, with me and the listeners. And thank you for coming on and sitting in the psychotherapist chair.
Thank you. It's been such a joy and an honor, Jerry. Loved it.
Thanks for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. Do you like what you're listening to or dislike what you're listening to? Either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We'd love to hear from you. So connect with us today.